This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Gibson writes for the Charlottesville Daily Progress and joins us on Monday afternoons. Good afternoon, Bob.
Good afternoon. Great to join you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being here. Where should we start? Let's start with your column. That's always a good place to start.
That was fun this week.
And the title was Good Politics, Bad Karma.
Well, there's plenty of that around.
I love that.
Politics, I've covered politics for 25 years, I guess. And sometimes when it gets a little bit negative too often, it can get to you. And there's no reason because it has to be that way, because when people act that way, basically they're hurting their own cause.
Right.
So I think people appreciate politicians and a discourse that will allow a little more civility into our lives.
Yeah. Now, are you seeing a lot of examples recently in Virginia where this isn't the case?
Well, I think bloggers occasionally have fallen victim to the kind of over-partisanship that, of course, it isn't just partisan, because Republicans can be very nasty to fellow Republicans and Democrats to fellow Democrats. But there is plenty of incivility in politics today. It starts in Washington and sort of dribbles down into the rest of the country.
Right. Now, in your column, you talk about the rules of civility for a modern society.
Well, we list 20, and the first one is really as good as any. Look for the good in people. There's usually something you can find. And that's very true. When you're having a political conversation with someone, you're not going to agree on everything, and you're not going to disagree on everything. And people have all sorts of things about them that will endear them to you if you will find them.
Yeah. That's one of the things we do at the Sorensen Institute as part of our programs, is we try to get people to start with where they agree.
Yeah.
Not necessarily where – people have a tendency to start with, oh, well, I know you're not – member of my party, so I know you don't agree with me on X, and they start there rather than
and you can do that in any situation. It doesn't have to be partisan politics. It can be churches. Church politics can be just as divisive and, I'm right, you're wrong, as any kind of politics. So if you start on that foot, you're starting on the wrong foot.
Right. Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress. Other lessons of civility that we would be good to incorporate into our daily lives?
Oh, I like number 13, take any elected official less seriously, as too many people take them too seriously, and this tends to rub off on them.
I like the sound of that.
They're just common sense. I mean, there's nothing outrageous here.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress, and this is your Sunday commentary, Good Politics and Bad Karma, and you can read that online, folks, if you happen to miss that. You can catch it at dailyprogress.com. Any other ones that jump out at you?
Well, number 3, agree with people when you can. Common ground is often easier to find than you might think. I think that's a corollary of number 1.
Yes.
There are really all sorts of ways that politics can be fun. Politics involves engaging and engaged people. And these people tend to have ideas. They tend to be energetic. They tend to have points of view that are based on something. And, engaging them in conversation can be a lot of fun. I have never had a dull year covering Virginia politics. There's always something new, and there are always interesting people involved.
Absolutely. Speaking of interesting people, George Tremonton passed away recently, and he's the father to Nancy Tremonton, who is husband to Delegate David Toscano, and of course George himself, known for a long time in our area.
Yeah, I knew George.
And tell me your thoughts on, because he was very involved in the integration of our schools.
Well, he was. He was school superintendent in the mid-1960s when Charlottesville Public Schools were integrated. And he was in a very difficult situation back then, because if he pushed too hard, people would criticize him, and if he didn't push hard enough, people would criticize him. In fact, anyway, anything he did, people would criticize him. It was the nature of the job, especially at that time. School superintendent is never an easy job, but he had it at perhaps the roughest time in recent history. And I think he lost his job because he did push Charlottesville into a better integrated school system. So, it's one of the things he had to live with, that he did such a good job, he was punished for it.
That's a, what a legacy. I mean, that's amazing.
But that's not unusual in Virginia, you know. And I grew up.
There were
up
a lot of people in that in those
yeah,
positions
there
in
were.
The 60s.
Who, there were. I grew up in Arlington.
Damned if you
Virginia.
Do, damned if you don't.
In Arlington, when I was growing up as a kid, we had elected school boards. People don't generally know that. You know, elected school boards just didn't arrive in the last decade. We had elected school boards in Arlington, and we integrated our schools in Arlington, and the state legislature said, they can't do that, and took away our ability to elect our school board.
Oh, wow. And they can do that?
I guess they can. The state.
In a Dillon Rule state, Richmond can do whatever they want, I guess.
Yeah, they successfully did that, and it wasn't for another 30-some, 40 years before we got them back.
Wow, gosh. And so he was, George Tremonton was run out of a job here.
In effect, he was, for doing a good job.
Yeah. Well, there needs to be a plaque.
Well, people
does he have a plaque? Does he have a
people
something?
Need to remember him. I mean, he died in his sleep. I was talking to David about his father-in-law today. He died in his sleep, which is probably the best way, you know.
Yeah, would that we all would have that.
He was 84. He had been leading Charlottesville schools in a time when Charlottesville was one of four localities in Virginia that had closed public schools just before that, during a resistance to the Supreme Court and the Brown versus Board of Education decision, you know, that we had separate but equal was not any longer going to stand as the law of the land.
So local resistance, they closed the schools, sent all the white kids to these private facilities.
The state did that. The state basically forced local schools to close. And it was a difficult decision in every locality, and Charlottesville immediately had schools in basements, and people rose to the occasion and started teaching elsewhere. But it was not the kind of thing you want your kids to have to go through.
Yeah. Down here at Buddy's Lunch, which is long since gone, Buddy Glover had a place that he told me when I interviewed him years ago before he passed away that they actually had classes in the basement of his restaurant.
Yeah.
I guess they just put them anywhere.
Oh, churches, basements. Charlottesville made do with a very bad situation. And then there was this healing. And, you know, one of the healers was George Tremonton, and he healed a little too well.
Yeah. And was he ever really recognized for his role in that healing? I mean, in your view, has he received sufficient recognition?
No. I think largely what he did has not been talked about in public enough. I think Charlottesville has an excellent public school system, as does Albemarle, and you know, it didn't come from nowhere. It came because people in the 1960s were willing to put principal on the line and get the schools righted after they had been wronged.
Right. And George Tremonton certainly was one of the leaders.
He certainly helped in that effort.
In that transition, yeah. Bob Gibson writes for the Charlottesville Daily Progress, covers politics, and joins us on Monday afternoons to talk about the same. You had recently, folks may not know and they may know, you host Evening Edition on WVTF, and it's broadcast in this market. I'm not quite sure when it's broadcast, but it's also rebroadcast. I hear it on Sundays. And you chat with the governor. You sit and talk with the governor, whoever that happens to be. And you recently had a conversation with Governor Kaine. And one of the primary topics, and folks were calling in left and right, were the new abusive driver fees.
It's a live call-in show, and the governor loves doing it because public radio gives him a wider variety of questions that he can't anticipate. You know, he goes on the show and doesn't know exactly what he's going to get. You know, when he goes on in Washington, he knows pretty much what he's going to get. When he goes on in the Roanoke to Charlottesville WVTF public station, he doesn't know. And there were a lot of questions and answers about the abusive driver fees. It's really amazing how much the public anger at these fees is still rising. Over 140,000 Virginians have signed online petitions calling for them to be repealed. And there's no question that come January, when the General Assembly reconvenes, there will be a lot of talk about either ending them or drastically altering them. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think anybody knows. But the governor was very, very clear. This is the same day, Tuesday, we did the call-in that he held a press conference with Speaker Howell, the first time the Republican House Speaker and the Democratic governor had held a joint press conference in 5 years.
Oh,
so they both agreed it was not time for a special session. Basically, the same folks who had just voted on this back in March and April were facing reelection campaigns, and he wanted the governor wanted the issue dealt with after 6 months of experience which would put it into January.
And they basically affirmed that they were going to stay with it, and then maybe next year they might tweak it to include out-of-state drivers. But nobody came forward at that press conference and said, we made a mistake, we're going to get rid of this.
No. They view it as a part of a successful transportation package. Now, it's the part that's been drawing all the lightning. And most of the reason is because of this unfair, in the eyes of most Virginians, partition between Virginia drivers who live in Virginia who are subject to this extra set of fees, and drivers from out of state who are not. And one thing that keeps coming up, and it comes up every time the issue is addressed, is this is sort of a convoluted way where you're getting people to pay for transportation by giving them fees on top of fines for, you know, egregious traffic offenses, speeding over 20 miles over, you know, going 80 miles an hour, this kind of thing. You can get $1,000 or more extra fees now from that in Virginia if you're a Virginia driver. Well, 2 cents on the gas tax would be giving you more money into state transportation coffers, and the 40% of drivers on Virginia's interstates who are out-of-state drivers would all be paying that 2 cents. You know, not just the Virginia users of the road, but the out-of-state users of the road, too. It would be so much easier. So I was on another public radio program last week late in a Washington station, and there was a great deal of talk. In fact, a Northern Virginia Republican state senator, Jean Marie Devilites Davis, said, yeah, it's fair. It's fairer to have the 2 cents on the gas tax than it is to go through this fee structure. And she said if the fee thing came up, she would vote against it.
But the folks that created this are the anti-tax Republican faction in Richmond. And
they did not
tax
want,
is a dirty, dirty word.
They didn't want a tax.
Even though that's what this is. It's a tax on speeding tickets.
It's a convoluted tax. It's a complicated, convoluted tax. And they ended up going this route instead of something that would be much easier to collect and enforce and across the board, the 2 cents addition to the gas tax, which would give Virginia more transportation revenue than all these fees.
And spread the responsibility for funding all of these new projects and the maintenance all across the state.
So I think there will be Homer Pierce, the...
I keep wanting to say Homer Pierce, but it is Pierce Homer.
The state transportation commissioner said that it is something that more and more legislators are talking about.
Yeah. I read recently, and don't hold me to this because I don't know the facts specifically, but North Carolina, West Virginia, Maryland, Pennsylvania, they all have higher gas taxes.
Right.
And yet the gas costs just about the same as it does here in Virginia.
It costs a little bit more, and it's a variation on the market, not on the tax. The tax doesn't get passed along exactly as each state passes it.
Yeah.
It's a function of market.
Right. So that tax then that is in Northern Virginia, that extra money then instead of going in Virginia, it goes to the corporations, the money corporations, the oil corporations, instead of to the state to pay for roads. That extra.
In a way, that is one way of looking at it, yeah.
That's the way I look at it.
Well, it's probably a fair way of looking at it. But I do think there will be more of a concerted effort to get lawmakers to look at the 2 cents on the gas tax and to erase the abusive driver fees.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and where we see leadership in this. And, of course, the big question is, are we going to see this at the ballot box in November? Is this going to, in any way, are people going to be either running on this or voting on this in this election year? All 140 seats in the General Assembly are up for grabs.
And there are only 5 Democrats in the House of Delegates who voted against this thing. You know, they almost all voted for it. They joined, even though it's a Republican measure that was crafted by Republicans from Northern Virginia in the House of Delegates, just about everybody voted for this abusive driver fee. So it's difficult for an incumbent to now turn around and say, gee, this is the worst thing we've done. Let's get rid of it.
Yeah.
Some of them are. Some of them are saying, you know, I didn't know exactly what I was voting for, and let's turn it around and let's listen to people. Some of them are saying, well, let's just modify it. Let's take out the largest fees and take out the little misdemeanor knick-knack offenses that may get you a fee and go only with the serious stuff at a lesser rate, and let's try to apply it to out-of-state drivers. But the rub there is they don't have a way to collect it from out-of-state drivers. So applying the fees to out-of-state drivers without the ability to collect them from out-of-state drivers is sort of a shell game.
Yeah, you can say you got to pay this, but if you got your license out of Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania's not going to take your license away if you don't pay that in Virginia.
No, they're not. So, I think the law will be changed. The only question is, will it be repealed or will it be altered?
Yeah. Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress, just very quickly, it seems like this kind of legislation would be the ideal kind of legislation if you're a lawyer who specializes in traffic fines and you defend people in court who want to challenge these kind of things. And I find it fascinating that one of the big architects of this legislation is Delegate Dave Albo of Springfield, Republican, who created, helped to create this legislation, when in fact that's exactly what he does. He is a lawyer who specializes in defending people, and they're going to need his services a whole lot more right now.
He is. Well, he rejects that point by saying, why would somebody hire me for $1,500 to pay to avoid paying a $1,000 or $1,100 fee?
Well.
And he may have a point.
Yeah, yeah.
He's also unopposed. The Democrats don't have, of all the Northern Virginia Republicans, they chose no one to run against Dave Albo.
Interesting. Interesting.
So he's got a free ride, but he still has to explain the abusive driver fees, which isn't very easy for him.
Right, right. Bob Gibson of the Charlottesville Daily Progress. And of course, folks, you know the phone lines are always open for you at 977-1070. Very quickly, we got about a minute and a half left, but big news this past weekend when former Lieutenant Governor John Hager, now with the Bush administration, Department of Education, he's also the former chair of the state board at the Sorensen Institute, was elected chair of the Republican Party of Virginia.
And of course, his real position is the father of one of the guys who's dating one of the Bush twins.
You're kidding.
No.
Are you serious?
No, his son has been Jenna's beau for some time.
Really?
And that won't change, but he will be leaving the Department of Education to come back and become Republican Party of Virginia chairman.
Now, what does this election mean? Tell us first what happened, because it was very, very close between he and Charlie Judd.
Judd was brought in from the Midwest to be the executive director of the party and had been running for, in effect, a joint position of executive director slash chairman. And a lot of people looked at that and said, does it really make sense to have the same guy serve in those two positions when we could have a chairman and an executive director? And I think even though John Hager was the more moderate of the two, and there was another conservative running in the mix who got a couple of votes who kept it from going to Judd on the first ballot.
Chuck Smith,
yeah.
Virginia Beach chairman.
So I think we ended up with the more moderate Republican despite himself, because the State Central Committee is not as moderate as John Hager, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting, Bob, isn't it, to go from Ed Gillespie to John Hager. I mean, it is a contrast.
But John knows the business community in the state. They know him. He's able to run the party as someone who needs to fundraise and put the party back on the right track in terms of fundraising. I think that would have been more difficult for Mr. Judd. In both jobs, who doesn't know the business community in Virginia as well. So, you know, Republicans are kind of breathing a sigh of relief if they aren't looking at it in terms of pure, you know, party politics. They're looking at it in terms of, well, we have a respected former lieutenant governor here.
Yeah, and I agree with Waldo, who wrote on his blog that this is good news for Republicans and bad news for Democrats, because John Hager is a hell of a guy, really great guy.
He's a very nice man, and I think he will do a good job.
Bob Gibson writes for the Charlottesville Daily Progress. You can read his work online at dailyprogress.com. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit seavillepodcast.com for more.